Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, my name is Barbara Hofmeister and I am your host for today's show. To be or not to be, the choice is yours. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about in the next 30 minutes. About the choices that people take in their lives, the consequences that come out of having made those choices. You're going to hear from really interesting people that sometimes have made wrong choices and were able to correct them. You will hear very, very inspiring stories, how people overcame their challenges and how people started to live their dream, to live the life that they truly choose to live, the life that they've always wanted to live. So get ready for an exciting 29 minutes from today's To Be show.
So hello everybody, this is Barbara Hofmeister, the host of the To Be show, and you are in for an exciting time today, because today's show is going to be slightly different. We have a very special guest, and that is Dr. Lynn Keitel, I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Keitel, but that's okay.
Keitel, sorry. Keitel, okay. So Dr. Lynn Keitel was an acclaimed physician and health educator, and she experienced a phenomenon in 1997 in Arizona, which totally turned her life around. And without further ado, I actually want you to tell us all about it, Lynn, if you don't mind.
Yes, actually, I have to say that talk about a spiritual awakening, which happens frequently with unexplained phenomena, which we can get into. I'm a physician, a medical doctor, having no interest or knowledge at all in the topic, especially UFOs, and actually, my husband, who's also a physician and a healthy skeptic, and I had a very close sighting to our home in Paradise Valley, Arizona. Very high. We live very high on the mountain, and actually, this was a little below us. Three amber orbs, and I call them an orb because the light did not extend outside the edge of these balls of energy, or whatever you want to call it. It was just spectacular, and they were in a pyramid formation about 50, 75 feet off the desert floor. And again, they were in a pyramid formation, very different than any light I'd ever seen. The light within each orb was a uniform amber color throughout, didn't glare at all. Every other light out there glared. And I thought, if I don't get a picture of this, nobody's going to believe it. And they were about 3 to 6 feet each, and I ran to get my camera. And as I did, my husband calls me back. One window of our bedroom is one wall is a window in our bedroom. So we're very familiar with what planes and helicopters and streetlights and car lights look like, because we have a panoramic view of the city skyline. And this was very, very different. And as I'm grabbing my camera, my husband calls me back and says, get over here quick, one of them is disappearing. And we watched as the top orb, without budging, just started to dim. Actually, it started to implode mechanically. It seemed like there was an intelligence behind it. And even after it disappeared, it seemed like it was still there. It's very difficult to describe, but it felt as if it went to another dimension. That's the only thing that I can even liken it to. And I went out on the balcony and actually captured a picture of the two lower orbs. And if anyone is nearby a computer, if they want to take a peek at the photo page on our website, www.thephoenixlights.net, they can see my unique collection of these unexplained phenomena, because I captured the two lower orbs. And as I'm watching them, I have to admit, and I did not admit this until 2 years later, after thousands of people, over 10,000 people statewide, saw what I had been seeing, and this is in 95 that I'm seeing these close orbs, I have to say that I felt like there was an intelligent presence watching me as intently as I was watching these orbs. And going through my mind, I was thinking, who are you? What are you? Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. And the next thing I remember, the left bottom orb started to disappear, and I quickly shot a picture of that. Those two pictures are on the website, and interestingly, and it wasn't until after 2 years later, after we went into an intensive investigation, after thousands of people saw what I had seen, did we discover that in the background of those pictures 2 years before the mass sighting, which has now become called the Phoenix Lights, the same formation, massive formation, was in the background disappearing as well. I mean, they're in the pictures. Data speaks for itself. But at any rate, I wondered what this advanced technology was doing outside our bedroom window, and it wasn't until 2 years later, actually 2 months before the mass sighting. And again, those pictures are posted. Some of them are posted on the phoenixlights.net website on the photo page, so you can take a look at it because they're spectacular. I happened to catch the same formation, the same phenomena in the same location, head on, turning into a V-shape. And it was so unnerving because it was a massive span, over a mile wide, of these equidistant lights that seemed to be attached to something. And I started calling around the next morning and actually found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport who saw the same thing at the same time. In fact, one of the air traffic controllers was a meteorologist and described six points of light, again, it seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to. But what was alarming to them is it was radar stealthy. It was in Class B restricted airspace, which is a 30-mile radius around the center of the airport. Whoever goes into that airspace must call into the tower, and no one did. Plus, they watched this phenomena head-on, like I did, but then turning against the wind. And I captured pictures at the exact time that they were seeing it, too. And then it slowly moved behind South Mountain, which is just south of the airport. And when I asked them, so what was it, there was silence on the other end of the phone. And one of the air traffic controllers said, beats me. And I said, you're air traffic controllers. You're supposed to know what's in our airspace. We were all curious. And I continued photographing these strange phenomena up into and including March 13th, 1997, when thousands of people were outside on a beautiful clear night here in Phoenix and all over the state, actually, looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp Comet, which was very clear in the sky at that time. And they also caught a glimpse of a mile to 2 mile wide either formation of these orbs that seemed to be attached to something that you would hear over and over again. You couldn't quite see what it was attached to, but there was a field in between, or they were attached to something, or craft. And that's another page, if people are on the website, thephoenixlights.net, to take a peek at the GAP page, Geospatial Animation Project, GAP, because after 12 years of compilation of thousands of reports to the UFO Reporting Center, National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, as well as Arizona MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, Village Labs, which was the clearinghouse here locally, as well as Councilwoman Frances Emma Barwood, who was the only official, elected official, who actually asked for an investigation. Two investigators compiled multiple reports seen by multiple people to show that there were many things happening throughout the state, not just these orbs, but multiple craft, and which is very, very intriguing that there was a parade throughout the state for many, many hours of these phenomena that actually, and I'm sure you will find and your listeners would find very enlightening and intriguing, is that in real time and in long term, they really affected everyone, not just myself, because I stayed anonymous for 7 years after the mass sighting trying to search for a logical explanation for what I had witnessed and photographed, and I've yet to find it, by the way, 14 years later. But in real time, these phenomena were really touching people at a very deep spiritual level. In fact, the movie Independence Day had come out some 6-8 months before, and children who saw these phenomena coming towards them because it was so massive and mysterious, were scared. I mean, that's what we've been inundated with for so many decades, is the fear mm-hmm. factor and movies
yeah.
that, you know, scare us and all that. That they yeah. were scared, jumping up and down, Independence Day, Independence Day. But as the phenomena got closer, not only children but adults as well had a calmness take over, felt a connectedness to the phenomena. They were in awe. They felt blessed, some of them have described, that they were seeing these phenomena as they passed over. And actually, after it passed right above them, and some people, it was very low altitude. I mean, this was totally silent. Massive span, but just non-intrusive. It just went right over them, and some people even looked up and saw these orbs were actually wells of spinning energy. I mean, it's amazing when you hear the descriptions, but a change, a transformation came over everyone, to where the kids even wanted to run after it after it passed, which is very, very intriguing. I mean, suddenly it was people had telepathic messages, you know, don't worry, we're not here to harm you. Very credible people, in fact. And we're talking military and pilots and lay people and children. I mean, a whole gamut of thousands and thousands of people had this experience. And in long term, which is also intriguing, many of the people that it's still affecting today, actually, at a very deep level, not only do they feel that we're not alone in the universe, but they've changed their eating habits. Some of them have become vegetarian. Others have gone into the peace movement, the environmental movement. And we can talk about the message as well. But in my investigation, because after the mass sighting happened, and here I had photographs that might be important, I really wanted to search out what was going on here, because suddenly something that I had no idea about at all, I was finding out that this was happening worldwide, in Germany, mm-hmm. in Russia. In fact, one of the pictures on the Gap page, if you look at one of the craft, which blew me away when I saw it, there is a craft that people described that I had no idea until I saw the finished product 12 years later, is identical to video that someone had captured during a mass sighting 1 month before our mass sighting in St. Petersburg, Russia, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. If you look at that video, it's identical to what the craft that people describe look like, and actually graces the cover of our the latest edition of our documentary, our internationally award-winning documentary called Phoenix Lights Beyond Top Secret, because I found it just so amazing that these phenomena are happening worldwide, UK and all over the world. I mean, I had no idea.
Yeah, I saw some in Chile in the 80s, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, it's been going on for a long
quite
time.
Was quite a few people there that saw it at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And I have to say, that was another thing that blew me away. I had no idea that these phenomena, particularly the orbs, have been described since human documentation began. There's descriptions not only etched out in primitive caves in Pakistan and so forth that have prehistoric animals that are long extinct, but in the sky, it's what we would describe as a UFO today. How did they know that
mm-hmm.
unless they had seen
mm-hmm.
it and were drawing what they had seen? As well as in the Bible. I mean, Ezekiel's wheel, and there's lots of other descriptions that today, I mean, the people of the day at that time were describing what they saw or what they experienced, but you know, today we could say that could easily be a UFO. In the 15th and 16th centuries, there's paintings and frescoes of people on the ground looking up at the sky, and you know, you can see a being in a ship that looks like a UFO. I mean, how did they get this idea? And even in World War II, which I found really compelling, there's what they called Foo Fighters. That were these exact orbs that my husband and I saw up close, flying around the different aircraft from Germany and Japan and United States. And it wasn't until after the war, I mean, at that point, everybody thought somebody had this advanced spy technology And it wasn't until after the war that everybody realized that nobody had this spy technology. What was this?
Mm-hmm.
So they've been around a long, long time. And even in the 60s, one of the most interesting reports that I found, because I pushed my entire professional life aside, by the way, Barbara, to try to
really... Yeah, I was going to ask you, because it influenced you in a way that you totally changed your life, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's what I want to hear about.
Yeah.
How did happen, or why did that happen?
Well, I mean, as I'm finding out more and more of this intriguing, compelling data, and again, I tried to be as scientific as I could, not only going to the University of Arizona, Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, Arizona State University, Geology, Anthropology, Mathematics, Astronomy Departments, and the renowned Brooks Institute of Photography in California to have my own photographic data analyzed and authenticated. And, you know, I quickly found out that we don't have the technology. Even though most things can be explained, there's a small percentage that cannot. And just because we don't have the technology, which I quickly found out we don't, to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on the FM dial for an AM frequency at this point. But the more I looked, the more I found such compelling data. I mean, even in the 1960s, I was starting to describe in Montana, here in the United States, two separate atomic bomb silos went offline while there were UFOs at their gate, and were offline for 3 hours, each one of them, and they didn't even know about the other one at the time, which is unheard of. You can't turn off nuclear silos. So these phenomena, what kind of message were they trying to give, especially now in light of what has happened in Japan? So, you know, when you look back at all the data, it is so intriguing, and the more I looked, the more I found, ended up pushing my entire professional life aside for 4 years, ending up with a 750-page journal of the history of these phenomena, other similar phenomena worldwide in the past, you know, decades, as well as what had happened here. And I didn't know what to do with it, I have to be quite frank, because the prospect of coming forward, and I stayed anonymous for 7 years, by the way, the prospect of coming forward was very precarious, especially for someone who is a physician in the medical field, not only because of the controversy, but also the discrediting and the snickering and the ridicule that has been so prevalent with this topic for so many years. And I saw what happened to people who came forward here. It wasn't pretty, including the councilwoman Barwood, who innocently asked. She didn't see anything, but she innocently asked in a council meeting why there was no investigation, just as a public safety problem. And she was plastered to the wall. I mean, they made cartoons about her, and they were, jokes in the paper and so forth. It was awful what happened to people. So I was very happy to just do my own homework. But I have to say that I went back to work as a chief clinical consultant of the Wellness and Imaging Center at the world-renowned Arizona Heart Institute here to help put our younger son through medical school. And he's actually in the documentary. He had a couple of sightings with us. He's a neurologist now. And while I pared down that 750-page journal, doing such soul-searching, Barbara, to decide whether I should come forward with this or not, but you know, on the one hand, I'm a physician, and there is a lot of healing to be had here. That's one whole issue here, because so many people, again, most things can be explained, but when someone has an unexplained phenomena experience that's real to them, it changes them forever, and many people are afraid to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Rightly so, and that is changing, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to come forward, was to help people who had experiences to say, hey, even, you know, it's really important and healing to share it, even if it's just one person. I've received tens of thousands of emails from people from all over the world who have had experiences but are afraid to tell even their families about it. So it's really important and cathartic to tell even just one person, okay? That's number one. Number two, when I saw all the data that I had, and again, if you look on the website, it is just packed with information and credible, authenticated photographic evidence that cannot be explained or denied. What do you do with that, especially as an educator? I have to say that for the last 35 years, I have also dedicated my life's work, which is kind of ironic with all this anyway, to community education of vital health issues. I was a health reporter for NBC in Philadelphia in 1976 and a syndication, and did the same kind of reporting for NBC here in Phoenix and then USA Cable. And by the mid-80s was also in private practice with my husband, seeing patients in family practice that were especially children and adolescents who were drowning in substance abuse, and wanted to do something to wake them up to the reality of peer pressure and substance abuse, and started a company in 85 called Health Education Learning Programs, where I produce video and workbook curriculums on vital health issues, on the reality of vital health issues. So when this fell into my lap, I have to say that I felt obliged to do the same for this topic. And again, I knew nothing about this topic, so I had to educate myself first, and so I could help educate others to this new reality. And all I'm doing is sharing the data, and people can decide for themselves.
They decide for themselves whether they want to believe it or whether they prefer to ignore it, right?
And absolutely, Barbara, because, you know, everybody comes from a different background, from a different upbringing, mm-hmm. from a different belief system, worldview, and some people can't deal with this, and that's okay. Other people don't want to deal with it, and that's okay, too, everyone in their own time. But, you know, ultimately, I felt it was important to share the best of what I had discovered, and I pared down that 750-page journal to 230 pages, and actually the third print just came out. The latest edition has an additional chapter now that talks about what has happened since I came forward in 2004, and I'm sharing some really riveting stuff that I never thought that I would share before, but I think it's time that we get it all out there. But at any rate, it really, again, doing a lot of soul searching, felt it was important to share the data, and you know, in good conscience, I couldn't stick it in a drawer. So, yes, I mean, not only has it changed my life, because after I came out with the book, the first book in 2004, I was approached by filmmakers. And coming from the video background, I really wanted to do something visually to help people understand and just share the data. I mean, that's all I'm doing is sharing the data. It speaks for itself. And having the witnesses tell their stories, you know, firsthand and experts in the field and so forth really is impactful. And I was approached by several filmmakers, one of which, Steve Lance, who just not only did he graduate from Brooks Institute of Photography, which was kind of a coincidence, and I've come not to believe in coincidence, but he was very persistent, and his parents live here in Phoenix, and he brought his equipment and said, "We're getting started." And I said, "You know, I don't know if other people, the professors at the universities that I met with, because it was such a controversial topic, and the witnesses that shared their stories and confidence, I didn't know if any of them would come forward." And every single mm-hmm. one I called, every single one except one who came on later for the second edition of it, were thrilled to be involved. So that was kind of a sign that we really needed to do this. And by June, I came forward in March with the book, and by June we had started production, and it was so overwhelming I couldn't do everything and had to make a decision, and I did, to finish the documentary. And we won over a dozen international film festival awards, and it keeps evolving. We keep adding to the bonus sections. We have astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell is in it. And by the way, the former Arizona governor, this is an interesting little side story. There was no investigation, no explanation for months until June 18th, and again, the mass sighting happened March 13th. June 18th, a front page USA Today article came out opening up the sighting to international scrutiny. We were deluged by media from all over the world. And once they started talking to the witnesses, again, their stories were so heartfelt and so detailed that they were saying, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? The very next day, former Governor Fife Symington called a press conference and said that they found the culprit, and everybody took it seriously. He goes marching out, one of his aides in a big alien head, and made a mockery of the whole thing, which really offended a lot of people. Well, interestingly, 10 years later, right after the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event, he shared bravely that he had actually seen the massive craft. And he was military and a pilot and said it absolutely was not of this world. So, you know, that was one more confirmation that from someone who was an elected official who's confirmed that something happened here that was really mind-boggling. And one of the other things I have to share, Barbara, that I think your listeners will be very interested in, that I lay out very simply in the book, but was a new road that I took once I started talking to some of the witnesses who shared that they had near-death experiences as children that was reawakened by the mass sighting. And I found that really interesting because I did too. And I go into my own near-death experience in great detail in the book. But what got me was the fact that I started thinking, could there be a connection between all unexplained phenomena, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body experience, or unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience? And lo and behold, again, I had no idea that this data was out there. I found university studies, the Omega Project at the University of Connecticut, Dr. Kenneth Ring, and a whole number of other studies that were being done to confirm that indeed, not only is the experience very similar in all unexplained phenomena, but the after effect is so profound, life-altering, enlightening, the awakening that happens within an individual who truly experiences what I started calling an UP, unexplained phenomena, UP, an UP, a connectedness to the universe and to the earth and to each other that's so profound, and it's life-altering. And this has happened over and over again. And if you look at the literature and you really study what has happened to people who have had an UP experience, you see it time and time again that their life is never the same. And that certainly has happened to me.
Well, that really makes sense because it opens up totally different possibilities and a different outlook to life. Unfortunately, our 30 minutes are up already. We've got about another minute or so. And I want to also announce for our listeners that you are going to be one of the speakers at the Festival of Enlightenment, which is just around the corner now in Colorado. In just a few days, it's starting. So what made you be part of this festival?
Well, really excited about it because I am showing the documentary on June 18th, Saturday, June 18th. At 10 a.m., the Phoenix Lights documentary and being there for a Q&A. And then at 1 o'clock, I'm presenting my PowerPoint, which is based on my book, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, and really going into a lot more depth, a lot more of the material that I've never shared before. So I hope people will come there and see it. I'm very excited.
Wonderful. Yeah, I hope that everybody, I mean, for me, I'm flying in from Germany to be at the Festival of Enlightenment, and I hope everybody in the United States that is interested in, you know, all kinds of things that enlighten us, you know, if you want to have a better life, if you want to transform your life, if you want to learn about all the amazing possibilities and opportunities that we have that are in our hands. And, you know, that we have the opportunity to use, and there will be 50 of us there, 50 speakers that all had some experience or other in this field of enlightenment and awakening, that will share the experiences. Yeah, that will share the experiences with the audience. So, I mean, this is going to be a really transformational event because they will hear so many messages of enlightenment from all of us that I am really excited. So I am looking forward to meeting you in person.
Oh, I'm looking forward to meeting too, and I have to applaud Jan and Bill Moore for putting this on and getting it together, because I think it is going to be just a fabulous time. They're calling it the Woodstock of Enlightenment. I hope it is.
Yeah,
it
I call it the Woodstock of the mind, too. Okay, Lynn, I see you in a couple of weeks in Colorado. Thank you very much for having been on. And everybody else, I hope you enjoyed the show today. I know it was a bit different than normal. Next week, same time, same place, with another amazing guest. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you so much. Look forward to meeting you soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah, speak soon. Bye-bye.